It's a warm, dry day around 230 million years ago in what's now northwestern Argentina. You're standing on a floodplain, surrounded by winding channels snaking their way across the late Triassic landscape. It looks kind of like a vast grassland, except you're in a time before grass even existed. Depending on the time of year, it could be raining, or the ground could be desiccated and cracked. It could be hot or cold, or even near freezing. The climate on the southern part of the supercontinent Pangaea is one of seasonal extremes in temperature and rainfall. During the rainy season, those winding channels fill up and short woody shrubs cling to their banks, taking advantage of the water while it lasts. When the floodplain dries out, though, it becomes a less hospitable place to live. Too dry most of the year for trees to grow here. To your right, you see the entrances of small burrows dug into the earth, with ancient mammal relatives called cynodonts peeking out. This time of year, they're hiding from the heat of the day, trying to stay cool. And they're not the only animals near you in what we now call the Cancha de Bochas member of the Ishihualasto Formation. You're in a cradle of dinosaur evolution. One of the places where we found the fossils of some of the oldest members of that branch of the Tree of Life. There's Eretasaurus, one of the first theropods, the group that would go on to include giant meat-eaters like Allosaurus. Even this early in dinosaur evolution, it's already well-equipped for its carnivorous lifestyle, with long, grasping hands that ended in three sharp claws for gripping prey. But the one you can see is just under 4 meters long, from nose to tail, and stands just over a meter tall at the hip. And while it was probably a fast runner that could chase down its meals on two legs, there are much fiercer predators for you to keep an eye out for. Things like the ancient croc relative Saurosuchus, a beast that might have reached 9 meters in length with curved serrated teeth. And, unlike today's crocs, it hunted on land. These predators aren't the only threat to watch out for in this landscape, though. While you can't see it from the floodplain, you know there are volcanoes out on the distant western coast of Pangaea. They're quiet now, but around 1 million years ago, they coated this landscape in a layer of ash. And they'll do it again about 5 million years down the road. This will be bad news for the creatures that live here, but it'll allow us to precisely date this chunk of time, the time of the first dinosaurs. Along with early theropod relatives, there are also the precursors to sauropods here, the classic long-necked plant eaters. But they hadn't yet evolved their iconic giant body plans. Earth shakers like Apatosaurus and Diplodocus wouldn't show up until tens of millions of years later. Instead, the earliest sauropod relatives were dinosaurs like Chromogosaurus. They were only about 2 meters long and weighed around 10 kilograms. At first glance, you'd never guess that their descendants would go on to be the biggest animals to ever walk on land. And here's the incredible thing. Eretasaurus and Chromogosaurus aren't even the only dinosaurs found in this place at this very early stage of dinosaur evolution. They lived alongside Eoraptor, a small biped around 1 meter in length whose diet has been reconstructed as everything from herbivory to carnivory. They also lived alongside San Juansaurus, a close relative of Eretasaurus, and the list goes on. The dinosaurs in this ecosystem had already started to diversify in anatomy and lifestyle and occupy different niches. This suggests that while these are some of the oldest dinosaurs we've ever found, they're not necessarily the first dinosaurs. So what was it? Where did they come from? And would we even recognize the first dinosaur if we found it? Hello and welcome to Eons, Mysteries of Deep Time, a podcast about some of the most perplexing problems and unanswered questions about life in the ancient past. I'm Michelle Barbosa Ramirez, co-host of PBS Eons, a YouTube channel about the history of life on Earth. Today, I'm tackling the mystery of dinosaur origins. Now, you might have heard of dinos like Tyrannosaurus rex and Triceratops, but these famous species were actually some of the last of what are called the non-avian dinosaurs. That just means I'm talking about the extinct group of dinosaurs that doesn't include birds, who are living members of the dinosaur group. Now, these famous dinosaurs lived at the end of the Cretaceous period, between 72 and 66 million years ago. Right before a giant space rock smashed into our planet, ending the Mesozoic era, the so-called Age of Reptiles. By that point, dinosaurs had been ruling over Earth for 160 million years, and they'd evolved into all sorts of strange and fascinating forms. They'd developed armor and horns, beaks and feathers, and grown to be absolutely enormous. But they didn't start out that way. Exactly when and where dinosaurs first evolved are still open questions in paleontology. And it's hard to even say what the first dinosaur was. And why, that is wrapped up in bigger questions about our understanding of evolution. When does a lineage stop being one thing and start being another? Figuring out dinosaur origins means first asking, where did dinosaurs come from? Dinosaurs are part of a bigger group of animals called archosaurs that first originated in the late Permian or early Triassic period, between about 255 and 250 million years ago. Today, the living archosaurs include animals like crocodiles, alligators, birds, and their relatives. They represent two different branches of archosaurs: the pseudosuchians, crocs, and their extinct relatives, and the avimetatarsalians, birds, and their extinct relatives, including the dinosaurs. So you have your croc-line archosaurs and your bird-line archosaurs. And if you imagine going down the branch that leads to dinosaurs, you'd first see pterosaurs split off, and then a number of animals that looked a lot like dinosaurs, but weren't quite there yet. We call them dinosauromorphs or dinosauriforms, depending on how inclusive we want to be of different extinct creatures. And these groups technically include the dinosaurs too, but we'll use them here to mean the early ancestors and relatives of dinos, after the split with pterosaurs, but before true dinosaurs. And if we're on the trail of dinosaur origins, some of the first evidence comes from footprints made by the dinosauromorphs. Now, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to associate a trace fossil, like a footprint, with the animal that left it behind. So, paleontologists give fossil footprints their own scientific name, called an ichnogenus. In the case of these early footprints, scientists gave them the name Prorotodactylus. They were found in the mountains of Poland and date to around 250 million years ago. And they gave important clues about the kind of animal whose lineage would go on to evolve into the first dinosaur. From these footprints, paleontologists can tell that the dinosauromorph that made them walked on all fours and was small, maybe only around 4.5 kilograms. It probably had long, skinny limbs, and long, narrow feet, with its three central toes squeezed together and the two outer toes reduced in size. And the footprints show that it walked on just its toes and that it probably had an ankle like a true dinosaur's too. There are even more fossil footprints from a few million years later from other sites in Poland, Western Europe, and the southwestern United States that point to the rise of larger bipedal dinosauromorphs, ones that we'd be even more likely to call dinosaurs if we could travel back in time to see them. So, why weren't these track makers the first dinosaurs? Where do we draw the line between dino and not dino? Well, to try to solve the mystery of the first dinosaur, we have to understand what makes a thing a dinosaur. One way to define the dinosaur group is in terms of its evolutionary history. The original definition of dinosauria, given way back in 1842, is any members belonging to the group, including the plant-eating iguanodon and the meat-eating megalosaurus. Two of the first dinosaurs found by scientists in the 1820s, and all descendants of their common ancestor. So a dinosaur is a dinosaur because it shared a common ancestor with all other dinosaurs, which makes sense when you're looking at the big picture of the tree of life. But what does that actually look like for a paleontologist digging up fossils in the field? What do we look for in the bones themselves to be able to call a thing a dinosaur? Well, the number one feature of the skeleton that all dinosaurs have in common is a hole in the center of their hip socket. But there are some other features that paleontologists can also look for, though there's still some debate on them. First, they have a particular expanded area of bone on top of their skulls that might have been filled with blood vessels that helped regulate their brain temperature. Second, they've got modified hand skeletons with semi-opposable thumbs, grasping second and third digits, and reduced fourth and fifth digits. Third, they have an ankle joint that functions like a simple hinge. It only bends in a single plane. This one sets them apart from the crocodile side of the archosaur family tree, who have a more mobile ankle joint. And fourth, they have a muscle attachment surface on their humerus that's enlarged. Now, all this sounds very useful, until you remember that the fossil record isn't only made up of perfectly complete skeletons. It's still a good starting place, though. You'd at least stand a chance of identifying the first dinosaur, if you found it. So, what was the first dinosaur? Well, we don't really know, and we may never know. But we can narrow down the window of time in which it probably appeared to between 245 and 230 million years ago. And we can say that it was probably relatively small and lightly built compared to later dinosaurs and walked on two legs because the first fossils we can identify as true dinosaurs were all like this, including the leading candidate for the oldest dinosaur we've ever found, Nyasasaurus. It lived about 243 million years ago and was discovered in what's now Tanzania. The environment it lived in might have been a warm, seasonally wet floodplain with lots of vegetation. It was between 2 and 3 meters long, with most of that length being neck and tail. It walked bipedally and was probably an omnivore or a carnivore, but without any teeth or jaws preserved, it's hard to know for sure. And not all paleontologists agree that it's actually a dinosaur. It could just be a really, really close dinosauromorph relative, part of that lineage that led to dinosaurs, but not technically part of true dinosauria. And that brings us back to the big evolutionary question at the heart of dinosaur origins, and really, at the heart of any question about origins, including our own. When does an old lineage evolve into a new one? And does drawing those lines actually matter? It's pretty safe to say that as humans, we like to be able to define and classify things into neat groups. But for the earliest members of a group, we have to be able to accept that doing this can be more or less arbitrary. The pieces of a skeleton that we need to draw these lines can be missing, or their morphology can be transitional between old and new, or their anatomy can be the result of convergent evolution and not a shared ancestor. And in the case of drawing the line between dinosaur morphs and true dinosaurs, it can be all of these things. Like those early footprints, dinosauromorph skeletons and early dinosaur skeletons can look so similar that drawing a line may not really be possible. As for whether it matters, I guess the real question is, matters to whom? For us, it matters for how we communicate the science of these ancient animals and for our understanding of the patterns of the tree of life. The ancestors of dinosaurs originated relatively soon after the end-Permian extinction, the biggest mass extinction that ever happened, and early dinosaurs survived and diversified after the extinction at the end of the Triassic period. Being able to point to the first dinosaur might tell us something about how these world-changing events influenced the course of life on our planet. For the dinosauromorphs and earliest dinosaurs, where they overlapped in time and space, the way it might matter would be for things like species or mate recognition, things that could have had very real consequences for them. So, in some ways, drawing the line between dinos and not dinos does matter, or at least it did. As for what that all means for our quest for dinosaur origins and for the first dinosaur, well, we could say it redefines it. Instead of the resolution of the mystery being that we can point to a specific time, place, and skeleton as the first original dinosaur, it means asking about the environment and the context in which dinosaurs evolved. What events spurred the transition from ancestral dinosauromorph to true dinosaur, and what does that tell us about evolution and life in the deep past? And that's the beauty of a scientific mystery like dinosaur origins. It opens up new questions and new ways of thinking about the history of life on our planet. This episode was written by Dr. Darcy Shapiro and hosted by me, Michelle Barbosa Ramirez. We were fact-checked by Callie Moore, and our sound design, editing, and mix was by Callie Dishman. The show is produced by Seth Radley. Our executive producer is Nicole Sweeney, and our editorial director is Dr. Darcy Shapiro. The executive in charge for PBS is Maribel Lopez, and Nikki Walker is PBS's associate director of programming. Eons, Mysteries of Deep Time is a production of Complexly for PBS Digital Studios, and we are distributed by PRX. Tune in next time where we'll discuss the mystery found deep within the Rising Star Cave system in South Africa, a chamber filled with the bones of an extinct hominin species. Until then, you can always visit us over at youtube.com/eons for more stories from Deep Time.